Hello, we're back. Welcome. Thanks for sticking with us. I hope you enjoyed those few commercials there. We've had great sessions so far from Jeffrey Snover and Kenneth Hansen. We've had a great one on SQL Server just then as well. We've had some great stuff from the Austrian MVP community as well on Sprinklers and PowerShell. So if you've missed it, don't worry. You can check it out on demand. It's all going to be available very shortly, so don't worry about that. Keep getting in touch with us on channel9.msdn.com. You can follow live, and you can also ask questions that you may have, any burning PowerShell questions, any difficult ones we'll give to Keith, as we said earlier, any easy ones we'll probably give to Keith. So they're all going this way, essentially. And you can also get in touch with us on Twitter. We're using hashtag PowerShell10year, so make sure you get in touch. So we mentioned right at the top of the day about this code golf. Now, it was new to me. It sounds interesting. It sounds cool. I've got some ideas in my mind about how it works. But for people who perhaps are just tuning in, they think, "Oh, competition, can I win stuff?" Yes, you can. What do I need to know about code golf?
Well, code golf is like any other kind of golf contest. The whole idea is to do something in fewer attempts than anybody else. In the case of code golf, if you go out to code-golf.com, and you can see this here for a minute.
And this isn't a Microsoft-specific site. This is open to everybody.
That's correct.
Right.
What you'll see is that we have set up three challenges for people to try out. They're all unique. And a couple members of the community came together, and they put this up on Code Golf, where you will try out a challenge. You need to solve the task.
That's a challenge in itself.
That's right.
Yeah.
And to make sure that you've actually solved the task, we've put together a pester test. I'll explain in just a second. And the goal of that is that we will make sure that the code that you've submitted actually does the job.
Right.
And then codegolf.com counts the number of characters that you used to see whether or not you've done it in fewer characters than everybody else. And that's the
Okay.
golf tie-in. So you have to solve the problem and do it in fewer code characters than anybody else. Not lines of code, but code characters.
Right.
And people in the community can make comments about how you approached it, but the main thing is that at the end of the day here, we will bring down each one of these things. We will run it against Pester to make sure whether or not the challenge has been met. And so you can see, I'm going to update this and see how we're doing. It turns out that we've had, looks like, six submissions so far for the first challenge,
Right.
which is, oops, the expected output. To just, do, hold on a second there. Get all the security updates installed on this computer. So that's this part
That's
right here.
That's the objective,
right.
okay.
Now, one of the things that we have set up is that the gentleman who put this together, Thomas Rayner and Will Anderson, put together some explanations in GitHub. And there's a link from each one of those holes to the GitHub challenge. And it
Right.
explains what you're trying to do, goes through the basic concepts, but it also says, here's how you go ahead and test this out. And Pester is one of these elements that, again, the community helped us get this right. It was a tool that was designed and developed by members of the PowerShell community as a testing framework so that you can, if you structure a set of tests properly and build it in with your module, you can rerun the test over and over again very quickly, just from a command line, say.
You could automate it.
That's exactly correct.
There you go.
And so gives you all the instructions here. And let's take a quick look at the status, and then we'll try to answer some of the questions that have been queuing up. Right now, we have six submissions here, and it looks like the best score so far here is by Draith6, and he's working on get the top 10 file extensions, in other words, the most file extensions in Windows System 32. Okay? And then the final one is get all the active aliases that are fewer than three characters long. And this is PowerShell aliases,
Right.
Not the aliases for people in your company.
Yes. Good
And
clarification.
so again, let's take a look at the status here. And we only have 5 submissions, and Draith 6 seems to be winning in all 3 of these. No, it's Bob Frankly is doing the best on the first hole. Oh. So we'll come back during the day. We'll take a look at some of these. We'll browse some of them. But one of the things I wanted to do is I understand that there's been some questions that have
been
queuing
up. Yep.
And we have a couple of minutes here. So let's answer them in the order they came in.
Okay, so the first one that came in was around PowerShell and Linux. Now, we've got a session later on PowerShell and Linux and open source, so some more cool insight, and that might actually answer some of the question later on as well. But what's your view on, now that PowerShell has entered Linux, or is it available on Linux machines, will modules like the online sign-in assistant for Office 365 and other services become available? What's your view on that?
That's one of the better questions somebody can ask. So Windows PowerShell, for those of you who are unaware of it, it's been around for a long time. Very recently, we took PowerShell to open source. And by that, we mean it is now available as PowerShell Core in GitHub. You can go to github.com/PowerShell/PowerShell and get a version of PowerShell that runs on Windows and on Linux and on macOS. And this person is saying, okay, well, it's available on Linux. Where are the commandlets? Well, this is why we really love our community members. One of the things we are trying to do is to drive the development of these things. PowerShell team is a bunch of outstanding experts, but we don't know everything. Mm-hmm. So as these requests come in, what we're trying to do is, one, have people vote on them. File the issue in GitHub, say we would like this specific set of commandlets, and then we can queue that up from the community or from the feature team that actually owns that part of the product and get it working on Linux as well.
Cool. So good stuff, good answer. So we've got time for, I think, probably 1, maybe 2 more, depending on the length of your answer. So the next question, I'm not going to try and pronounce the name of the person who asked because it's quite a complex name. But this person asked, can somebody put some restrictions in PowerShell as to not execute scripts?
As a matter of fact, yes, you can. So the easy way for me to answer that is to ask you to go to microsoft.com/PowerShell. And from there, click on the documentation link. And in there, you will see information about JEA, JIA. Just Enough Administration, that's specifically designed to help you set up a way to constrain not just the commandlets that can be run, but also who can use them.
Great, good answer there. And it's also very closely linked with JIT, Just-in-Time Administration, which is also worth reading up on if you're new to JIT and JIA. So there's cool stuff there. So a question from Bob, who is top of the leaderboard in the golf for hole number 1. How do I phrase this? So Citrix is still using snap-ins. Can we tell them off for doing that?
No, because...
For want of a better phrase.
One of the things you have to realize is that Citrix has been a really good partner for Microsoft for a very long time. And they did what we asked them to do. You have to realize that back then, snap-ins were the way to go. Mm. And we are now 8-9 years later, and so while the world has changed, Citrix did a really good job of trying to put those together.
There's actually a related question before we go to the next session from Drew Burt. Is there an end of life for snap-ins to module conversion for providers? So I suppose that's linked with them. And we want to encourage, obviously, as many ISVs who are building software to utilize the module approach versus proprietary snap-ins, let's say, but you know, it's going to take time, isn't it?
It is, and one of the things that you will see is that as we move into PowerShell Core and the GitHub version, that's PowerShell version 6, there are things that don't exist there, and what we again ask the community to help us understand is this is missing from PowerShell 6 and we really need it. Mm-hmm. Right now, nobody's asking for snap-ins. So there's a chance that over time it will not appear in PowerShell 6 in the future. But it's certainly something that's built into Windows and will continue to work for a while.
Right. Okay, well, I think we've got time for just one more. I think this is a relatively quick one. Maybe not, though. The future of ISE, beautiful scripting environment, local to Windows, it's great, versus Visual Studio Code, which is the new guy in town. Everybody seems to love it. It's very popular. It's free. Everyone loves that, obviously. It's a cross-platform solution for developing. Why should I use one over the other? This person who asked, Garrett Nielsen, has always used ISE, but he keeps hearing about VS Code, so making a lot of noise about it. So What do you think?
So the majority of our work historically has gone into the ISE because it's baked into Windows. Mm-hmm. And it's something that is readily available and there, and people can just pick it up and use it. And quite honestly, I spend most of my time in the ISE when I was learning PowerShell.
Yeah, server and desktop as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Visual Studio Code is cross-platform. And that's really the key element is, again, as we are over time, and this isn't going to happen quickly, but over time, we will be moving to the cross-platform development more and more. And so in the future, our development will go towards the Visual Studio ISE, what we call editor services for PowerShell.
Yeah, and also I think my understanding as well is that PowerShell ISE is for PowerShell.
Right.
The Visual Studio Code, I've been used to editing JSON files and other languages or the tool, there's so much and there's so many extensions that I can extend that for specific scenarios. So it's a lot broader that it's aiming for versus the ISE, but both great tools.
They are both great tools, and there's no reason for you to stop using the ISE if you are happy with it. But certainly as people are moving into a DevOps-centric world, they're beginning to have to deal with a broader range of file types and coding types. And I think that Visual Studio Code is really going to be a good tool for them to learn.
Great stuff. So I think that's enough questions for now. We'll come back to the rest later on. What's up next? What do you want to go for?
So let's take a short commercial break, and then we're going to hear from the scripting guy and the scripting wife, two people who are very well known to the PowerShell audience.